So, Mariana, today on Top Comment, we're going to talk about a lot of very interesting stuff. But first, I want to talk about this new Pump.Fun Go feature, which I think is hilarious because it's literally like all of the worst Black Mirror sci-fi iterations of the internet being harmful in just like one thing.
Just when you thought you saw the most pathetic garbage imaginable from the crypto community with things like NFTs and all the shitcoin rug pulls, they find a new low, a diabolical one at that.
Yeah, and it's very similar to this site we chatted about before, Dare Market, and we actually spoke to Isla, who's the founder of that, and discussed at the time this sort of like gamification of dares, yeah, and people doing like, you know, some slightly funnier stuff and then some pretty outrageous stuff as well.
Exactly. Stuff. Yeah, and she has criticized Pump Fun Go for ripping her off. Isla has. And I mean, it is very similar. So the slogan of Pump Fun Go is pay anyone to do anything. So like initially Pumped Up Fun.
Alarm bell.
Yeah,
ringing.
Exactly.
Quit your job on camera. How much for this one? 3 bags. You've got to say thoughts on Chill House 100,000 times. How much for this one? 2.7 bags. Build a 6-foot triple T statue in Times Square. 939. Fart through a megaphone in a lecture. $875 for doing these simple tasks. The days of Fiverr are over. These are the kind of things you need to be doing.
Again, initially Pumped Up Fun, it was already problematic because what it was a website where you could mint a meme coin instantly and promote it through live streaming anything, like lighting yourself on fire. There's all sorts of crazy stuff, which led people to do dangerous things. This is an even more streamlined way to financially incentivize dangerous, insane things. So within hours of Pump Fun Go existing, there was a listing offering 10,000 Solana, which is almost $700,000,
wow,
to do a suicide-related task.
Oh my God.
There was also this weird story of someone offered a bounty, paid in the cryptocurrency bounty work, for someone to tattoo the cryptocurrency bounty work on their forehead. And immediately someone did. An Indian man named Arivu did this, but in the copy for the bounty, they had misspelled it as bounty work instead of bounty work. So he got bounty work, not bounty work, tattooed on his forehead.
Did he win the challenge?
Well, they couldn't adjudicate whether or not to pay him out because he had done what it said, but it wasn't promoting the cryptocurrency that it was meant to. But instead, what they did was they minted a new meme coin called bounty work, which immediately skyrocketed in value, and the payout to him was around 15 grand.
Arivu asserted that he actually followed the rules exactly 110% as they were written, and that's when everything exploded. This story went so viral and caught so much attention, this terrible typo that almost cost him thousands ended up making him much more.
And then wasn't there also one market that was tied to a dare essentially to interview the family of the man who killed Henry Novak, which feels like it's getting into like all kinds of ethical, well, certainly from a journalistic perspective, but ethical issues with sort of doing something like that.
Yeah, it's banned in the UK, so you can't access it in the UK. But for the rest of the world, they can now pay anyone to do anything.
Talking about Henry Novak, we mentioned his murder last week and what's been swirling online and in the real world about that. And actually today we're going to get into a bit more around that and also some of the violence that's been unfolding in Belfast connected to a violent assault on the streets there. This playbook, this pattern that we're seeing on social media that happens again and again, different depending on the case, but kind of the same thing. And then it flares up in the real world and can have serious consequences. And X and Grok in particular, the chatbot on X, seem to be playing a significant role in that.
And we're also going to talk about how Keir Starmer is expected to very soon announce an Australia-style ban or something similar for social media users under the age of 16, how that's come about and the arguments for and against it.
Plus, loads of people have been in touch about these ads, often showing Nigel Farage arguing on Question Time, for example, that are really taking over social media and that we have investigated before. So we'll have a bit more
on that. And arguing is an understatement. I mean,
like kind of attacking.
Punching people in the face. If your feed is full of images of Nigel Farage punching people in the face.
Stay tuned.
Or painted green. Did you see that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Then we will try and explain why that's happening.
Thank you.
So Matt, my social media feed has been absolutely dominated by posts about what's been going on in Belfast. And I've had loads and loads of messages from people asking me about the content as well. And all of it started with this viral video that shows somebody, a suspect who's now been identified, and we can talk about it, seriously injuring a man on the streets of Belfast. It's a really, really graphic video, understandably provoked a very, very strong reaction. And so we've seen a huge amount of content, both real content about the suspect, who is someone called Hadi Alodid, who is a 30-year-old Sudanese man. He came to the UK in 2023, was given refugee status. That information has been shared with us by the police. People are then picking up on that and posting against immigrants. And that seems to have contributed to some of the violence we've been seeing on the streets of Belfast, like these images of stuff on fire, allegations that other immigrants have been targeted, who obviously have nothing to do with this incident, and so on and so forth. And it feels to me like so many of these incidents that we've looked at before, this kind of playbook we see happening again and again and again.
Exactly. And what feels so familiar now is the pattern of the reaction to these events. Something happens, social media blows up, all of a sudden there are riots. But what's different in all these cases is the individual case. Obviously, the murder of Henry Novak is very different to the attempted murder we've seen in Belfast, to the non-existent gang rape in Epsom. But all three led to similar things. And the thing that ties them together, which I'm sure you're going to tell us, is how Grok and X lead to the misidentification of suspects and misunderstandings around the story.
Yeah. I think that it's important to talk about the role that X has played in all of these incidents, and then talk about Grok specifically and how it's kind of contributed to the spread of misinformation in some of these cases and in other cases too. And I think that a lot of this comes down to something that we bang on about on Top Comment again and again and again, but it's still worth mentioning, which is the way that these platforms across the board are designed and the kinds of content that they favour and reward. Rage, essentially. And it's this kind of inside the rage machine point. When I was doing that investigation a few months ago, talking to insiders from all of the major companies, they've basically said to me, look, everyone kind of knows that social media algorithms run on emotion, particularly negative emotions like anger and rage. The problem is that decisions have been made at those companies that have actively inflamed the outrage problem rather than making it better. And I think what we're seeing unfolding in all of these different cases connects back to that. Obviously, there are kind of serious variations. Like when it comes to Belfast, the suspect was initially misidentified in terms of their nationality by the police. There was a suggestion that they were Somalian rather than Sudanese, but they are someone who'd been granted refugee status, and therefore that's triggered a wider debate about immigration and refugees and so on. When it came to Epsom, which we talked about before, there were allegations of this gang rape, and it turns out the police revealed a gang rape had never happened at
all. Not only was it not immigrants, but there was no gang
rape. There was no gang rape. And then in a case like Henry Novak's, obviously his murder was really shocking. There are real allegations of police misconduct and other things, and the man who killed him was Sikh, and so a lot of the conversation has focused on him and the carrying of the weapon that he had, the kirpan or not. So there's like, obviously, exactly as you highlight, real key differences between all of these things. But actually, the pattern that we see online is exactly the same. And hate is directed indiscriminately at immigrants, including people who are totally innocent here and have nothing to do with what's going on.
And that indiscriminate point is very important, because the reactions to this, whether it's Musk, Robinson, or any of these accounts, when they talk about them, they're always similar. They always say, how many times do we have to let this happen before we do something? But none of these incidents are the same, right? Henry Novak, this wasn't, you know, the group that people like Tom Robinson are mainly pointing to, which is Muslims. This was a Sikh. You know, Axel Rudabakana was born in this country. The Southport attacker. All of these cases are different, but they all are painted as though they're part of the same problem, which is there are too many immigrants here, too many Muslims here, and they're doing something. Now, this is the first case where it arguably does fit more neatly into the far-right narrative, in that this was a refugee.
Yeah, and we've seen lots of violence that has been triggered by the misidentification of people in these cases. So take Southport, for example, where there were false allegations that the attacker was an asylum seeker who'd arrived the year before by boat, that they were Muslim. None of those things ended up being true. But the thing is, and you and I know this well, when you're just monitoring your social media feeds, so quickly after an incident like this goes viral or happens, people have immediately made up their minds about what they're going to say, and they're putting it out there. And sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong. And ultimately, the impact is the same. And while there are legitimate questions and concerns that people have around immigration that, you know, there can be discussions about and conversations about, what these posts tend to trigger is not just violence, but racist hate, hate and abuse directed at people who, you know, we've seen, for example, in Belfast overnight where the violence has been unfolding. An African family who've lived in the area for 20 years have moved after their windows were smashed during the violence, and a Ukrainian teenager escaped after her family's front door caught fire.
See, that sounds and looks like a pogrom. When you see that, that is terrifying. And the last,
so these people have nothing to do with the incident that's happened.
Of course. And, you know, what in Epsom, we saw a home for vulnerable adults being vandalized. In Southport, we saw non-white people being dragged out of cars. It feels like a pogrom. You know, this is really terrifying stuff for anyone who is non-white and living in the UK, especially in these areas. It must be absolutely terrifying.
And I think another thing that's actually worth us mentioning is that, like, we actually saw this happen when three women were found in the sea in Brighton, and there was not clarity at that time on who they were. They'd not been identified. That was also seized upon by these activists. And then when the information came out about their identities, they dropped it and they moved on and they decided not to push it anymore. I've seen it happen as well with other incidents, like stuff that's been in the news where people think that it might fit into the pattern that they want it to, and then it doesn't. So they're not interested.
So a lot of this rage has unfolded, as always, on X.
Yeah. And I think the issue with X is that, you know, you think of old Twitter, which was by no means perfect. There were lots of problems with it, but it was the place that people were following unfolding news events, what's going on. People still do that because a lot of, you know, major accounts, whether it's police profiles or politicians or whoever, still post on X. The grammar that existed that helped us navigate what was going on old Twitter, like blue ticks, for example, that would tell us we could trust someone, that's all still there. But now anyone can purchase those ticks and grow their profile and game the algorithmic systems and have that reach. And I think the problem is when any of these events are unfolding, whether it's Belfast or the murder of Henry Novak, some people are relying on X in the way perhaps they used to rely on Twitter, but it doesn't have that level of accuracy or authenticity that it used to have. But it nonetheless makes some of this misinformation or hate or just speculation or anger feel legitimate. And I think Grok has played a really big part in that, which is the chatbot on X.
Exactly. And Musk, because he himself can boost stories and amplify them to a whole group of people who are primed to be angry about immigration. But yes, Grok in particular is an issue. And this was an issue with the Henry Novak case, right?
Yeah. So when it's come to Belfast, we do know that the police initially misidentified the suspect in terms of nationality. They said that he was Somalian rather than Sudanese. But with Henry Novak, what happened was, there was this body camera footage released showing his arrest, which was really shocking. And there are serious questions to be asked of the police, which we chatted a bit about last week. And the officers specifically involved in that incident have not been publicly named by the police force. What then happened was loads of people on X started to fill the vacuum and suggest this is the police officer's identity. Grok, the chatbot, started to push the names of two officers in particular. And the issue is that Grok kind of seems like this legit aggregator, right? You ask Grok in publicly in the comments, who are the police officers involved in this incident? And they give you these two names. And then it's kind of like a bit of a chicken and egg. It's like people have posted those names and or those names have been collated in some way because they've been reported in local press or been misreported or whatever. And then people then see what Grok says and they're like, oh, right, okay, I'm going to go find pictures of this person. I'm going to share it. And it's all publicly visible. It's not like when you use a chatbot that's not inbuilt into a social media platform where you are only seeing what it says.
Yeah, and one of the defining features of Grok is that it uses the real-time aggregation of data on the social media platform that it is built into, X. What dangers does that pose as opposed to a normal chatbot which is trained on a separate data set?
The issue is that, as we've been highlighting, there are serious questions around the spread of misinformation and hate on X. And so what Grok has to work with, essentially, as its material is pretty variable at times.
Right.
And you can see how these kinds of incidents happen, because in real time an event is unfolding and often we don't have the answers, like we don't know the identities, they're not publicly available, we don't know the names. But that immediate desire for answers and that immediate desire for names and information means that people are posting, people are speculating, and Grok can then draw on all that information. And Grok has come under all sorts of criticism around all sorts of things. But when Grok posts and says, look, I've looked through this and the information is this, it's written in a way like a fact. It's like going onto Wikipedia or right. Googling something. You feel like Grok just gives it that air of this is a fact, when actually, and we've seen this happen loads of times, it's not a fact.
Is it also the speed and the reach that Grok has?
Yeah, and because Grok will be, you know, quite prominent in the replies. And the misidentification of these police officers in the Henry Novak case has a huge impact on these individuals. It can be totally reputationally damaging. And actually, the people at their centre, particularly, say, a serving police officer, can't often come out and bat for themselves and defend themselves publicly, or that name is not released.
And we've seen lots of examples of this.
Yeah, we have. So I went and had a bit of a look back at the different times, especially over the past year or couple of years, that Grok has been involved in either misidentifying suspects or victims or amplifying the misidentification, which is often what happens. Like, it can be hard to work out whether Grok has originated the identity or whether Grok is just amplifying other users and what they've said, and it kind of becomes like a bit of a patient zero, even if it's not necessarily patient zero. So one of the cases that I was looking at, which is involving the shooting of Renee Good in Minneapolis by an ICE agent. So when she was shot, there was all of this viral footage, and very quickly people started making AI generated images of the officer involved. For example, one of the posts was like an AI picture of a white ICE agent with brown hair, and then it has a little caption that says Steve Grove. Now, there is a real Steve Grove, who is the CEO and publisher of the Minnesota Star Tribune. And what it looks like happened here was that, you know, the name of someone who is connected to a publication which is local to where this incident happened has ended up sort of being thrown together with then these AI images. The guy does have like brown hair and kind of looks like the AI image. And then voila, people are then falsely accusing this guy of being the ICE agent, who's not an ICE agent at all. Mm. I mean, he doesn't work for ICE. And he's spoken publicly about the impact that that's had on him. And that's not the only example. Take, for example, the mass shooting that happened on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia, that was targeting the Jewish community there. And there was this man who very bravely sort of disarmed the attacker, a guy called Ahmed Al-Ahmed. But he was totally misidentified originally by Grok. There was a suggestion that someone called Edward Crabtree was actually the hero, or even that Ahmed Al-Ahmed was somehow connected to the war going on in Gaza and Israel and was like a hostage. We saw it happen when Charlie Kirk was assassinated, and there was this false name, Gustavo Lafessa, which went really viral, yeah, suggesting that that was the shooter. It wasn't. And then we've seen it around incidents in the UK as well, like this train attack that happened in Huntingdon. Again, sort of false identification of the suspects.
This is very worrying because, I mean, the question I'm thinking now is, how many Southports are we going to have per year now? And there appears to be something particularly dangerous about the way that the AI is integrated into the platform, that it kind of crystallizes and amplifies misinformation. Social media already did that, right? But it's like with AI, what it's not doing is it's not rationally and logically analyzing things with independent thought. It's predicting the next thing that would likely occur in a sentence in response to what you're asking. It's like when you ask AI, I'm 100 yards away from you, how can you hear me now? And it says, oh yeah, you're a little harder to hear now. But if you keep the phone right next to you, it still says that. In the same way, AI is more likely to kind of just reflect back to you what you want to hear and amplify it. And I mean, there were concerns when Elon Musk took over Twitter that I think are now bearing out.
Yeah, and to be honest, I cannot see a world in which this stops happening unless there is a significant change, either to the designs of the sites or to the guardrails put in place to stop this kind of stuff spreading. But, you know, the problem is this stuff gets traction and then it's too late. And yeah, then you kind of can't undo all of that rage. I've reached out to X about all of this and they haven't got back to me, but they have previously got back to me when I've put this point to them about the way that their site inflames rage and contributes to these kinds of violent incidents. And what they said to me at that time was that they've open sourced their algorithm, which actually points towards this rage point. And X says in its guidelines that, quote, promoting healthy conversation is one of X's core principles.
So Keir Starmer is expected to announce a ban on harmful social media apps next week, alongside a range of restrictive measures. This could also include, by the way, blocks on young people communicating with strangers on gaming platforms, and limits on AI chatbot use are also on the table. So how did this happen? Basically, for a while, Keir Starmer was kind of reluctant to go with a social media ban, but the Lords kept pushing for one. So they essentially are now obliged to introduce some kind of restriction on children's access to social media. And they've done a consultation to decide what that restriction would be. That consultation has now happened. Now, of course, like, even after this passes, it could be subject to a judicial review. Meta is currently seeking a judicial review on some aspects of the Online Safety Act. But the consultation is interesting. Some of the findings that they've found in this consultation is that ownership of mobile phones increases with age group. 19% of those aged 3 to 5 own their own mobile phone, increasing to 97%.
What does that mean, though? Like, how does a 3-year-old use their phone?
Well, 37% of 3 to 5 year olds use social media,
which I think is slightly
60% of 3 to 5 year olds have their own social media account. 3 to 5 year olds.
But does that include like watching YouTube videos? Because presumably, like quite a lot of kids, their main social media use age 3 or 4 or 5 would be being plonked in front of an iPad and watching
I think that's a good point. So when you read that statistic that like most 3 to 5 year olds have a social media account, do they just have a YouTube account that's like got playlist for Teletubbies or whatever, right? Like, but also the majority, almost all 13 to 15 year olds have a phone and use social media. But this is like change is coming. So Australia obviously has already banned social media for under 16s. Spain is going to ban social media for under 16s. Denmark for under 15s. France has now approved a ban. Norway has. Singapore, Italy, Indonesia, Brazil, they're all considering bans right now.
And in terms of what could actually change here, because, I mean, when we talk about a ban,
yeah,
that presumably means that, like, if you are under the age of, say, 16, you cannot physically, like, sign up for an account or log on. But presumably there are other slightly less drastic versions of that, like time limits or curfews on use or restricting specific features, like you can only hang out in this bit of the platform but not another bit.
Yeah, and also restricting the harmful aspects of social media, like infinite scroll is being investigated.
I mean, or recommendation systems and how they affect you.
Yeah, I spoke to a quite senior figure in the Labour Party the other week, and his take was that there's a feeling that they've done so little, social media companies, to make their platforms safe for young people, that like this ban is happening to show you that we have teeth as the government to regulate you. Maybe if you start making your platform safer, then we could talk about removing the ban.
I mean, we chatted a little bit about this when we interviewed Taylor Lorenz, which people can go back and listen to in the top comment feed, because she's got quite a, I don't know if radical is the right word, but quite a sort of contrarian view of the bans. Like, she basically thinks they're a really bad idea. Obviously, lots of people, including those who get in touch with us and speak to us, especially people who have kids, are quite keen on it. I think when it comes to what teenagers actually want and think, I find that when I've done various sort of investigations or documentaries and I've been speaking to them about what they're pushed, the overall consensus that I think exists between them is, look, we kind of want to be able to use social media in so much as we want to be able to talk to our friends and to look at stuff we find funny or interesting, but we don't want to be recommended stuff that we don't like seeing, like violence, like hate. And actually, we feel frustrated at the lack of agency we have. Like, several of them have said to me on multiple occasions, actually, about how it's really annoying when you say to the social media site that you're on, you click the button that's like, I want to see less of this, I want to see less of it, and then you just get pushed more and more of it.
Yeah.
And I guess my only thought around this is, do you think that having read through some of this stuff around the consultation, teenagers are actually being listened to in terms of what they think would be helpful or they want? That's not to say teenagers know best, because like you're a teenager.
So it's really interesting. So you're right. Taylor Lorenz, her views, I think, would seem radical because, just to be clear, 74% of this country support the ban. And it's similar amongst young people. Half of 16 to 24 year olds wish they spent less time, and 3/4 of 16 to 24 year olds want tougher regulations to protect young people from social media. So yes, young people want regulation. They are aware of the screen time that they're having, the sleep that they're losing, the harms it's causing, and they're asking for this. So in that world, when you consider that everyone wants some kind of regulation, you have people like Taylor Lorenz coming out and saying that this is a kind of political tool to suppress dissent, to suppress, for example, LGBTQ youngsters like meeting online and developing their sense of identity, which are totally valid points. People see that as radical.
I think as well that the reason that we've reached this point is because of lack of accountability from the social media companies, right? And because of an inability to build alternatives that perhaps could serve teenagers and kids better. So if you were putting me, just with my kind of experience of investigating this world, like putting me in front of the drawing board and saying, Mariana, like, what would you do here? And obviously it's our job to point out the problems, not come up with the solutions. But one of the things that a lot of people mentioned to me is kind of this idea of like algorithmic pluralism, and how can we build different types of platforms where, for example, under 16s won't be pushed the kind of stuff that an over 16 or an adult can be pushed.
Yes.
It feels like we've almost like that ship has sailed. Like, it's like, it's impossible to do that. Well, no, the companies aren't engaging.
It would be better probably, because social media isn't inherently harmful, right? It's not like banning tobacco or gambling or
where like any version of it is not good for you.
Whereas with social media, it could be a good thing. It used to be a better thing.
Bring back cat videos.
Yeah, bring back cat videos. Could we regulate social media companies and force them to get rid of infinite scroll, to stop designing algorithms that push harmful content to people? You know, people often think about Molly Russell. She was a teenager in this country who died after being pushed. It was found by her algorithm, took her own life being pushed a content that kind of romanticized suicide.
And you know, people like her dad, Ian Russell, and actually loads of parents, I think of Stuart and Amanda Stevens, who their son was killed and his murder was connected to violent and harmful content on social media. And you know, lots of these parents have been incredibly sort of courageous in their advocacy for this sort of thing. But often because they feel like companies are not listening to them, but they've also been frustrated at politicians and felt sometimes like politicians aren't really listening to them either.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, Molly Russell's father, I actually think, is not...
He's not that keen on the ban. No,
I think he wants the kind of regulation we were talking about, whereas Breonna Gray's mum does want this ban.
Although she also suggested, so her daughter, who was transgender, was killed, and again, social media played a role in what happened. And she once suggested an idea, which I thought was a really smart idea. I'd not really heard anyone talk about. So one of the problems with a ban is that teenagers famously are good at getting around how to, you know, you can work out how to get past these limits or to log on to an account or create an account if you really want to. One of her suggestions was, should there be phones which are specifically for under 16s, and on those phones you can only download certain apps? And obviously a lot of this is also about age verification, right? Because quite a few experts in this field, people like Frances Haugen, who is a whistleblower from Meta, who've spent a fair amount of their time investing in and looking into how can we improve age verification. One of the risks of that, though, is that if people have to, for example, provide their ID, what happens if you live in a place where you could be persecuted for who you are and you don't want to reveal your identity? So I don't think the age verification problem has been resolved yet. And that's a lot of why people think, well, will this ban actually work?
Exactly. And I think that gets to one of the main criticisms of this legislation, is that it seems like a quick and easy seeming solution to a complex problem that perhaps also is being done because it's essentially populist policy. You know, this is a hugely popular thing. It's like free for the government to implement, basically. And Keir Starmer, when he was initially hesitant about this, was attacked by Kemi Badenoch, who, by the way, previously arguably contradicted herself by criticizing the Online Safety Act for being, you know, clamping down on free speech, now is attacking Keir Starmer for not clamping down on social media. So it's an attack window for people trying to attack the government. It's easy populist policy, and they get it done, and you know, maybe they win some votes. But is it the smartest way to deal with this problem? And that brings us back to some of the arguments for social media made by people like Taylor Lorenz. One, the thing that keeps coming up time and time again is this idea that it is a space for LGBTQ youth and other minorities to congregate and to develop their identity. If you take that away, you know, that can be quite terrifying for a young person. Also, there's a political thing here too, right? When you think about some of the youth movements that have happened in Nepal, in Kenya, in Sri Lanka,
like the Gen Z protest movement.
Exactly, in Bangladesh. All of these movements, some of which have toppled governments because corrupt governments
are social media led.
Authoritarian governments have tried to clamp down on social media. This is what Iran did. And so there's a sense in which it's anti-democratic, right? And
I think as well that the thing I just come back to time and time again with all of this is it feels like the debate around regulation has been a bit of a game of political ping pong. It's been very different in the US, for example, under Donald Trump than how it was when Joe Biden was president. We've seen countries like Australia be pretty firm on their decision, like, we're going to carry out this ban. Then in the UK, there's been quite a lot of flip-flopping, if we're honest, between like, let's do it, let's not do it, that seem to be in some ways impacted by the political winds in other places like the US, because that's where the majority of the companies are based. And I think the users sort of get lost in all this. And it feels like there's two things happening at once, which is probably kind of gross failings in terms of protecting kids and teenagers and to some extent adults from harmful content that's being actively pushed to them and which the companies make huge amounts of money from doing so.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, people also don't want to feel powerless or like there's a diktat. Like, social media is so embedded in our lives. I think the idea that you're going to be able to just go completely cold turkey, I just can't really see that working.
And also, by the way, in the US, there is a weird allegiance between the kind of conservative advocacy groups that don't want like queer people to congregate, that don't want what they refer to as trans ideology to spread, and this legislation. At the same time, there's also a weird allegiance between people like Taylor Lorenz and these trillion-dollar tech companies who are the main opponents to this legislation, let's be clear.
And also like influencers, right? Like if you're a TikTok influencer, teenager or otherwise, and someone's saying you might not be able to use, I mean, for some people, this is like their livelihood.
Yeah,
or like
true.
They're, and also you're kind of saying to teenagers, you can overnight become a superstar superstar and build an entire career on social media. And the idea that that would be taken away from you, again, I can see why there are people who would find it problematic. And some of the people who've been most vocal about it are people that basically benefit from that relationship they have with the social media companies.
But I think it does come back to this. And this is the difference between the UK and the EU and the US. And remember, the US has asked the UK to not do this. They say because it hampers free speech, but also because it would put the onus on US-based tech companies to act. In that people in the UK and the EU seem to think something needs to be done. But there's also this interesting thing about this, right? Which is if we're saying that algorithmically driven content can make a young person take their own life, can turn a young person into an anorexic.
Or could radicalize them in other ways.
Could radicalize them in other ways.
Into violent ideologies or other extreme ideas, which I've spoken to teenagers who that happened to, who say, I really wish that hadn't happened to me.
The kind of scary subtext of that is we're also saying that algorithms can basically change all of us, can shape our brains and our identities in really scary ways. So this isn't just about young people. Like, I think that if what we're saying about young people is true, then the implications for everyone are terrifying as well.
Matt, I have had so many messages from people about these AI-generated images, often showing Nigel Farage doing kind of pretty violent stuff on the set of Question Time or otherwise. Mm. It feels like over the past few days in particular, there's been a massive uptick in these kinds of adverts on X. And actually, we investigated these several weeks ago because we'd spotted them and Top Comment listeners had been in touch to say, what the hell is this?
I mean, it has completely taken over X, is these AI-generated videos of Nigel Farage kicking people, punching people, like brandishing a gun at people.
On TV as well. Like, make it look like it's on TV.
It's on Question. It's always on Question Time. And it's always like pushing a crypto product that has to do with the Bank of England. It's one of the more obscure trends on social media. Why is it happening?
Well, what it seems to be, and we chatted about this before, is essentially attempts to exploit the social media outrage we've been detailing throughout this episode and to put something out there that will grab people's attention. They think, what? Did that actually happen on Question Time? They click on the link, they go through, and then they are redirected at some point to this scam. Usually it's selling cryptocurrency, and those are the main ones that I've been seeing, but there have been a few other sort of services I've spotted as well. There's a bigger question over why there's suddenly been an uptick in this, because it's been rumbling along for a while, but there does certainly seem to be more. Like, you cannot basically move on X. Like, when I look on X, every about three or four posts, I'm seeing this stuff. I think a reason for the uptick itself could be that the tactics have proved quite effective. It's a good time to exploit political outrage, outgo more of the ads. Other people could be copying. It might not be that all of these pages are connected to the same company. It's a tactic that seems to be working. Let's do it. It could be that some accounts have sort of been hacked, so to speak, or they're like putting out these spammy links or being involved in the ads. It could be a network of inauthentic accounts that have been set up to push these ads. A lot of them are ones with blue ticks that are kind of quite random accounts, really, where if you go and look at them, where the adverts are coming from. And then the reason why everyone is talking about it even more isn't just because it's on our feeds, but because this is a story that has now piqued the attention of people in Westminster who are spotting the ads, whether it's political journalists, whether it's politicians, whether it's Nigel Farage himself, who said that he's actually complained to people very high up at X about this and the misrepresentation of him in these adverts.
Well, that's that. I mean, I get that because a lot of these are paid ad slots on X. So presumably X knows who's paying for them.
Yeah, and also that they're making money out of them.
That they're making out of them. And of course, also, AI has made this kind of thing much easier. It's made easier to do it cheaply and fast. You can ask AI to write a script for you to create fake AI websites with fake AI videos of Nigel Farage punching someone, and you can
do it at
scale.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the kind of unintended consequence, it seems, of these scams is the political outrage point, is the way that it could impact political discussion at a time where tensions are obviously really heightened. We've also got various sort of political events happening in the UK over the coming weeks. And so I think one of the worries that I've heard from certain politicians has been, you know, is this an influence operation? Is the intention here to spread misinformation about Nigel Farage or about prominent politicians? From what I know right now, and this could change, it seems like this is genuinely part of a scam, and that is the kind of unintended consequence.
Well, sometimes political outrage is the scam. Sometimes it's a side effect of the scam because the scam works on political outrage. But both scams and political misinformation work on the same groups of people demographically who are people who seem susceptible and gullible to stuff they read on the internet. And actually, we've seen that like a lot of the disinformation campaigns, political disinformation campaigns, work with scamming companies. The scamming companies will have a data set of everyone who's gullible for scams, and it will direct political advertising to those people. That is what happened in Romania.
Yeah, and so actually all of this again comes back down to the way social media works and what kinds of stuff will grab people's attention, hook them in, and prove a valuable way of exploiting them or scamming them in some capacity. Okay, if you've been seeing loads of those ads or anything else on your feed and you want to get in touch about it as well, please send us a WhatsApp on +44 330 123 9480 or email topcomment@bbc.co.uk. Tung Tung, unfortunately, Matt, has not been in touch. But Tung Tung, if you're listening, or anyone else, or Elon Musk even, because we've spoken about X quite a lot on this episode, we'd love to speak to you, Elon. We would like you all to know that we're going to be publishing Top Comment for the next few weeks on a Thursday rather than a Friday, if you are a super fan and waiting for us to drop it. Bye.